Okay, I'm back.
Okay.
I just want to understand what we're trying to do here first.
Okay.
You took a survey at USCOTS in May and about the use of fun activities in the classroom in an introductory statistics course.
Mm-hmm.
You agreed to be interviewed further, so that's what we're doing here.
Okay.
Just going to ask you some background questions, some questions on how you use fun activities or don't use fun activities. And should take about 45 minutes for the interview. The other thing I wanted to let you know is obviously I'm recording. I will be jotting down notes, but your name is going to be nowhere associated with what we discuss. Your name will not be associated with anything that you say. We are intending to write a paper on this, but remember, anything that you say will not be identifiable to you. If you're not comfortable in answering a question, you're free not to answer that question. There should be really no risk other than just, you know, your daily experience, day-to-day kind of thing. This research has been cleared by IRB at Buffalo State College. And if you need any of that information, we'd be more than happy to share that with you. Did you have any questions before we started?
No, I don't.
Okay. Then just some background questions at first about your typical students in a statistics class. Before I do that, is basically approximately how many classes do you teach each semester?
Well, personally, I have three traditional sections with 40 students in each section, plus I have an online section of the exact same course that has about 80 students in it, and then I'm the course coordinator for that course, and that has about 1,000 students total.
Okay.
And I have quite a bit of influence over what those instructors, what the other instructors do in their sections, too. And then I also, this semester, am doing a brand new online course for a different intro stats course, and that has about 30 students in it.
Okay.
And then I'm the course coordinator for yet another intro probability course where I don't teach any of those sections, but I supervise all the people who do. And so I've got some influence there, too.
Wow. Okay. For the course coordinator, the first one that you mentioned, the online, the 80 students in there, you said you had influence on some of the stuff that they do. Do you have influence on how they use any activities or...
I do. That's come along quite a bit. I've been teaching that course, the big one, the 1,000-person course. I've been teaching that since fall of 2003, and I've been the coordinator the whole time. And when we first started doing that, none of us knew what we were doing. But over the years, I've added in quite a few fun activities and you know, videos and you know, other fun things, too. And the other instructors, most of them have come along with me. And there are very few times that I've forced them to do that kind of thing, but doing an activity with the gummy bear catapults, I'm forcing everybody to do that next week for two-way ANOVA because it's just such a great one, and then we're basing a lab off of it. So that is an incident where I have forced them. But there are other activities over the semester that they have just picked up on that they choose to do because they see that my students really like it, so they try it too.
Okay. Now... how's that first online course with the whole, that you're the course coordinator, different from
That one's mostly traditional. It just has an 80-student online section, too, that's coordinated with it. So, I mean, it's 1,000 people traditional, and then I've got those 80 online students, too.
Okay, and how is that on? Because you said you're teaching a new online course with about 30
students. Right, and there's a separate online course for a different. Can we just give these numbers? Would that help keep everything straight?
That would
I know
be
you aren't
easy,
going
yes.
to identify. Okay, so for the big 1,000-person one, that's my main course right now, and that has an online attachment to it, but it's mostly traditional. That is 301.
Oh, I see. So I understand, I think, now. So it's kind of like a hybrid course where there's a traditional part of it and online?
No, most of the students take it the traditional way. Most of the 1,000 students take it the traditional way. But then I also have an 80-student online section that goes with that that's purely online, but it's coordinated with the traditionals. And then 113 is the new online course that I created.
Okay.
So that's a separate online. I have two different online courses going in addition to my traditional courses. So 113 is the new one that only has 30, and then 225 is the probability class that I coordinate but don't teach.
Okay. That helps a lot.
Okay. I didn't know how anonymous we had to keep this, but surely the numbers won't give too much away. Okay.
It's really to protect you, then you know, so I'm not going to be including the numbers in anything that I write in any paper, so you don't have to worry about that.
So that'll just help the discussion then. Okay.
So the 113 course, how is that different from the 301 course?
113 is a statistical literacy course for liberal studies majors, and for right now, I only have them just in the online section. I'm going to be switching to doing the traditional version of that for the spring semester instead of doing 301. But for right now, it's just purely online. And so there's not nearly as much in the way of calculations. It's much more conceptual. We spend a lot longer talking about experimental design and government statistics and that kind of thing. It uses the Concepts and Controversies book by Moore.
Okay.
So it's a much lower level. And the students are much more afraid. I never teach any stats or math majors. It's always the non-majors that I have in whatever course I'm dealing with.
Okay. And then the probability course that you said that you are, the 225 mm-hmm. course that you're the coordinator with, do you, you also have influence on what kind of activities that they use?
I do. That one's taught entirely by TAs. Our very best TAs in the department get to teach that one. And so they've been working with me for several years before they get moved up to that one. And we discuss ideas quite a bit for that course. They each do their own thing, but it is coordinated and the good ideas get passed around.
Okay. Then, so I'm not sure how to do this. We want to look at, say, the age distribution, the typical age of students in those three different.
They're almost all the typical 18 to 22-year-olds. That's mostly who I teach. I'll get a couple non-traditionals in there here and there, but it's almost all 18 to 22-year-olds in all of them.
Okay. And I think let's go on, just for our discussion, stay with the 301 and 113 courses.
That sounds good.
What about the ability level? You gave me some suggestion about the stat literacy, the 113 course.
Right, where they're just terrified.
Right.
For 301, it's not a whole lot better. I mean, it sounds like it would be a harder class because it's 300 level, but it's still introductory statistics for non-majors. And the people that we have taking that class are mostly very hands-on learners. We have ag majors and technology majors and nursing majors. We have some pre-med people and some science people, but it's mostly the ag and technology and nursing people in there.
Okay.
And so they're, you know, not a lot of our technology students are people who wanted to be engineers until they saw how much math and theory they have to take in engineering majors at our college. And so they switched to technology where they can just do the hands-on stuff and not worry so much about the theory. And the ag people, too. They just want to be outside. They don't want to be inside doing statistics. They're really wonderful, and I enjoy working with them, but none of them chose to take this class.
So
the more you can bring things in a hands-on way to them, the better they're going to accept it, because that's just how they learn.
Right. And so this is a course that's typically required for their various different majors?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we wouldn't have anybody taking it if it weren't required.
Okay.
And they're afraid, too, just not as afraid as the 113 students.
Okay.
And quite a few of the 301 people end up liking it by the end of the semester. I don't think the 113 people end up liking it no matter what, but the 301 people, most of them end up being okay with it or even liking it. We even recruit some statistics minors out of that class, too.
Okay. So that was my next question going to be about the interest level. So you're saying that the interest level for the 301, about how many do learn to like statistics?
I'd say more than half end up liking it. You know, maybe not. I mean, none of them change over to majors, but we do get a couple minors each semester out of that class. And other people who, you know, in their end of semester comments say, yes, it really wasn't as bad as I thought. I learned a lot. And they'll write back to us at the end of the semester telling us how they're using it in their other classes or in their jobs. So, and a lot of it is we do incorporate the fun, and we try and take the fear. But we still make them work hard, but we, you know, we use the humor and the fun and the hands-on stuff. And so it's not as scary as I thought.
Okay. And what about the 113 course?
113, I think that they are going to hate it the whole time. I do what I can. It was my first semester teaching that class, too, so, I mean, maybe I will find new ways of making it better for them. But the way I've read the evaluations of 113 in the past, and, I mean, the students, they just don't have a good time from beginning to end. They just stay scared the whole time and unhappy. So I really am hoping to find ways to get around that the more that I do that. But this is just my first semester trying it.
Okay. Now, you suggested, make sure that I'm correct in this, you suggested that you think for the 301 course that the hands-on activities and the fun things that you do in the course mm-hmm. do cause some of that, more of the students liking the course, the content,
absolutely.
The topic. Now, do you use the same amount of that kind of thing, hands-on activities and fun, in the 113 course?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to. I would love to find a way. Right now, the 113 is the one that I have is just online, and I will be doing the big traditional version of that in the spring for the first time. And then the online classes, I have not been as good at finding ways to incorporate. I can't figure out how to do the hands-on activities in my online classes.
Okay.
I mean, you can bring in applets, but it's not the same thing as having something in your hands, which these students
right.
seem to need, at least for 301. I'm not sure yet about the 113 students. I try and put in, you know, the videos and cartoons, you know, from CauseWeb and that kind of thing wherever possible, just to kind of lighten things up and to make them less anxious. But since these are online students and it's my first semester, I'm not sure yet how much that is affecting things from 113. I'll get a better feel for that when I teach the traditional version next spring.
Because okay.
I do plan on using a lot of that then, but I'll have two sections of 300 students at a time when I teach that, and so I'm really not sure how to bring in the hands-on activities, which I think are so important. I'm not sure how to do that with 300 people at a time.
Right. So let me go back to the 301 course when you suggested
okay.
that you think that the hands-on activities and the fun activities do help
mm-hmm.
students like the course. So you're saying that that's more for the traditional setting as opposed to the online setting.
Right, right. And I just don't get as much feedback in general for the online, so it's hard to tell. And I haven't taught it any other way for the online
okay.
students. I already incorporated the, you know, the videos and the cartoons from the very beginning, so I don't know. I've never had them make specific comments, but I can tell from my traditional students just watching them and the comments they make in class.
Right.
That does seem to be helping them.
Okay.
It makes them more comfortable approaching me to ask questions when they don't understand something too. I think they see me more as a real person, and I can have more casual interactions with them when I'm walking around to help them with the hands-on activities, and so it's not as scary to ask me questions, which I think is important.
That makes sense. Yes. Okay. And then the last question about the background is about gender. Is there a difference in the distribution of gender among any of those classes?
No, I think it's pretty even. I don't have hard numbers on that, but I would guess it's pretty even. I mean, most of the ag and technology majors are boys, but most of the nursing majors are girls, and so it balances out.
Okay. And I do have another one that we added. What about the race and ethnicity distribution?
Almost entirely white and all of my very little diversity because the ag is mostly the farm kids from here in Indiana. So over,
right.
I don't know if I should have said that, but it's mostly the farm kids. So, you know, so that's mostly white kids. And we just don't have a real diverse population to pull from here here, unfortunately. Okay. We'll have a few Asian students and maybe one or two African Americans in each class, but the rest of it's just a solid sea of white.
Okay.
I wish we had more diversity, but we just don't.
Yeah, it's interesting when you do have that diversity, because I teach at a very diverse two-year college, and it's very interesting the differences that they bring into the conversation. So mm-hmm. I agree with you that the diversity is an interesting thing to work with in the classroom.
Usually my minority students are very quiet in class, and I think it's because they feel like they're all alone. You know, there's nobody else in the class that looks quite like them, and so it's hard. So sometimes they just participate well but quietly, and other times, you know, it's hard to get them to interact with those groups when I bring people into groups to work on the activities. And so I'm not sure. What have your other participants said about the differences?
I'm getting the same as you, is that the a lot of the ones that I've talked to, there's several of us in doing interviews, and everyone I think I talked to has been from a majority white institution.
Okay.
So, and they didn't really mention anything about the difficulties of including the different minorities into the groups or anything like that. But I know that I would imagine that's an issue. So we're not going to concern ourselves with that right now.
Okay.
Because one of the things we were trying to decide on is, for example, I did have one graduate course, someone who taught a graduate course that had maybe a fourth or third of the students are Asian, from China, Korea, various different countries, and the use of some of the activities didn't necessarily help with those because of the English as a second language difficulty. So that's really the only question I was asking, and that's why it's there, is if you have maybe Hispanic students with English as a second language or Asian students with English as a second language, there might be some barriers to understanding or using some of those fun activities, like cartoons or something like that. They may not understand the joke from just reading. So,
okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
It does make sense.
Yeah, so that's the only reason I was asking that question, is to see if that is continuing, if I see any of that. But obviously, you know, it's going to be hard to make a judgment on the basis of just a couple of students who are minority students. So we're
right.
just not going to worry about that for you at this point.
Okay.
All right, so let's look at some of the different categories of fun activities that you may use in these classes. First, you've already suggested you use cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Do you use them in both 301 and 113?
I do. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of them off of Cause and a few others I've just found on my own.
Okay. How do you use those?
I just incorporate them into lecture if there's a topic. You know, there's one about mu and sigma going on vacation to Greece. Well, I stick that one in after we've done a few normal distribution problems and everybody's been very deep in those, you know, just to lighten things up for 30
right.
seconds, and then we go on and do more problems. And sometimes I've had I don't know if this question comes up here or later, but in the past sometimes I've had class participation points awarded if people will bring me a cartoon or a joke or a video or something related to statistics, but they have to tell me how it's related, whether the artist or the author used it well, and why it's funny. They have to tell all that. And so that's where I get a lot of my cartoons that I show, too.
Okay. So when you use the cartoons, do you use them also on the online section of 1301?
I use it for my traditionals. Well, I don't think that the other lecturers necessarily use my cartoons. My stuff is out there, and they can use it if they want to, but I don't think that most of them incorporate that. I definitely use more videos and cartoons than my other lecturers do.
Okay.
They're starting to do more of the hands-on, the fun hands-on activities that I do, but I don't know that too many of them are using the cartoons and videos.
Okay.
But I definitely use it with my traditional students and my online students for both 301 and 113.
Okay. What about games? Any kind of games? And I'm not sure if you know what a game is, but I wanted to see what you might think of it as a game, too. So do you use anything that you might consider to be a game?
I don't know that I do. I have seen other people use it successfully, you know, like Jeopardy-type games, not in 301 so much, but in other classes. I don't think that I have used that. It's a good idea, and I would be interested in doing that potentially, but I haven't done it yet.
Okay. What about poems or songs?
I don't think I show one poem. There was a poem that the New Yorker or New York Times Magazine, one of them had, it was from a Chinese poet called Love the Homeland, Love Statistics, and so I show that one at the very beginning of the semester. For the songs, I have not put any of those up. I definitely can't sing myself, so I haven't sung any of those. For my 113 online, I found a song about the normal distribution that was on Cause, and I did incorporate that into my lecture, but I didn't sing. I just put the lyrics up, and then I found the karaoke version of the song. I think it was Oh Christmas Tree. I found the karaoke version of that you can just play in the background so they can sing it in their heads themselves and they don't have to listen to me attempting to do it. But I did incorporate that into the online lecture for 113.
Okay. And the last thing is jokes and humor. Do you use those in...
I do. Some of them, for actual jokes, I may have found a couple off cards. I don't necessarily tell jokes, but just humor in general, you know, just trying to make little funny marks about whatever we're doing or poking fun at myself or that kind of thing while we're working. I do try and use that quite a bit.
Okay. But not
funny stories or, you know, but not necessarily outright jokes.
Okay, but not necessarily according. So if you're making fun of yourself, but not necessarily according to the concepts of statistics.
Right. Sometimes it is about the concepts, but usually it's probably more about me or just being a student in general or that kind of thing. It's probably not mostly about the content.
Okay.
Sometimes it's about the stories that we're reading. Like we have one example, you know, where the rats are being made to jump off of different heights over and over and over again, and then we measure their bone densities later. You know, we'll make jokes about that, but not necessarily about the statistics too much, I don't think.
Okay. So you mostly use more than the others cartoons.
Cartoons and videos, a lot of funny videos.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So how, so what kind of videos?
Well, I have my favorite. I have a clip from Saturday Night Live where Betty White was being given the census by Tina Fey. And so I use that. I had to have it edited down a bit to take one small racy part out. But after that, the rest of it's really good for talking about the difficulties in taking a census and non-response and you know, response bias and that kind of thing. I have a couple clips from Parks and Recreation, the NBC show, where she was out taking a survey. And I have a Bill Nye the Science Guy clip. I have a Simpsons clip. I think I probably have some more, but I'm not. There were some pretty funny videos for World Statistics Day sent in by the different countries, and I show that in my 113. I show some of those in my 113 online class because they talk about, you know, government statistics, so I toss some of that in.
Okay.
Also while talking about how important government statistics are, but I thought they would enjoy some of the songs and videos that came out from the different countries glorifying statistics.
So anything else that you might think of that you use that I haven't listed?
Oh, going back to the games, there is one game that we play. There's a Guess the Correlation applet that's set up to be a game that I got off of Merlot. And so we do play that as a as a game in class. So I guess that's one. That's one game that we play.
Okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with that website.
Okay.
Okay. So let's look at how you use these. Okay. So just looking through, because I think we've already addressed the next questions. All right, so when you're using the cartoons, do you think they are more effective with your online students versus your
in my traditional? I have
yeah.
no idea. I have no idea because I can't see my online students when they're watching them, so I don't know what kind of reaction I'm getting. You know, maybe they just skip right past it. Maybe they smile. I don't know. I know that they at least give a nice little breather, and everybody's shoulders go down a little bit when we get to something like that in the traditional class. You know, you try to stick it in after we've been doing something stressful,
right.
and everybody relaxes a little bit. We can regroup, and then we get back to doing the hard stuff again. And I like the body language that comes after I show something like that, but I have no idea whether I'm getting that same effect in the online class.
Okay.
But I feel like it can't hurt. I mean, even if they skip it, so they skip it. You know, they can see that I at least tried to lighten things up a little bit, whether it worked or not. I tried, and that's got to mean something.
Okay.
I feel like it can't hurt anyway.
All right. So let's look at the cartoons first, and let's see about how often do you think that you use the cartoons in a typical semester?
Oh, no, I would think maybe 5 or 6 times in the, no, probably more than that, because I have more at the beginning. Let's say maybe 10 times in the semester I'll stick up a cartoon.
Okay.
It was easier to find those for the experimental design sections towards the beginning of the class, but you can still find some for the later topics.
Right. The jokes, and so you said that really that there's not too many jokes, but you use more often humor. So how often do you use humor in the classroom?
You probably use humor in the classroom of some sort in just about every class, just to try and keep the students with me and keep them awake. And I teach 7:30 in the morning for my first class, so you got to use something to keep them with you.
Sure. Okay. And the other two, the others that you suggested a single poem that you have and a song. So I'm guessing mm-hmm. that they were only one case of each of those.
I think there's just one of each of those. I don't think that I have any others.
Okay. And
then
the videos.
I would be interested in finding more if somebody else would perform the singing. But
right.
But most of the things on cause, it's just the words, and they suggest the music, and you're supposed to do it yourself, and that's not going to happen.
Okay. And the videos you have, one, you've got maybe, I don't know, 6 to 10, maybe more clips.
Yeah, six to ten, and my students find more for me each time. I'm doing an assignment with the 113 students right now where they have to find links to different types of articles for me and post it on a site called Mixable, which is sort of like Facebook but for an academic setting. And one of the types of assignments that they have is to find, you know, the video, the cartoon, the something related to statistics and explain to me, you know, something with humor or creativity or something and explain to me how it fits in and whether it was a good use or bad use. And some of those students have found interesting links that involve music with statistics. And so I may end up incorporating some of those into my lectures later. But the students are seeing those that they posted for each other and making comments on those. So they are being exposed to more, excuse me, more than just what I'm showing them. They're finding them for each other, too.
Okay. So let's just concentrate then on, at this point, the cartoons and the humor.
Okay.
Go a little bit more deeper into those two.
Okay.
How much class time, when you present a cartoon, say, in the classroom, in that setting, how much time do you devote to a cartoon?
maybe 30 seconds. Not that long, just long enough to give everybody a chance to read it, let it sink in, and then have at least half the class smile a little bit.
Okay. So do you do any discussion after that of, you know, to make sure that those who didn't smile, or...
It depends. Well, for the ones who didn't smile, you know, I'll make a joke like, hey, you know, you got to give me credit. It's hard to find statistics cartoons, you know.
Where I'm
kind of putting it back on myself, or depending on how deep the cartoon is, sometimes we might go into, like, there's the one about the three deadly sins of statistics, you know, that didn't randomize, the extrapolated, and accepted the alternative. I think those were the three. You know, I might remind them, you know, remember when we saw that one? Remember when we, you know, said we're never going to use the word accept in this class, you know? And so I will go back and, you know, point out there's a little bit more in depth there. The one about Mu and Sigma going on vacation in Greece, there's only so much you can talk about there afterwards.
Right.
But you know, I have a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon back when I'm doing experimental and survey design where, you know, Calvin's asked for his favorite kind of chewing gum and how old he is and that kind of thing for a survey for a magazine ad, and he fills out these crazy answers. And so we talk about, you know, the response bias that comes from doing a survey that way. And so we do go a little bit more in depth for that. And there's a Dilbert cartoon that uses where they did a landline phone survey of people, and they ended up getting only old people because people are, you know, either didn't understand the question, they were hard of hearing, or they offered them a hard candy as if they were in the room, you know, that kind of thing. So we talk more about the types of sampling error that happens from doing a phone survey using only landline. So we can go more in depth with that. And so that I might take a couple minutes to do.
Okay. And when you present the cartoons, are they typically in the beginning, middle, end, or does it really depend on what you're talking about?
I'd say it depends, but generally I try and put them in the middle because I want it to be a break for them after we've been doing something hard. It just seems like we need to catch our breath, and that's a really good way to do it. Same with the videos. I either want to put that towards the middle or the end of the class just to let everybody catch their breath.
And so the videos, how long are those videos?
Some might just be like a minute. Some are more like 5 minutes. Nothing's longer than 5 minutes. I think they would lose interest even with a good one if it were more than 5 minutes. So between 1 and 5 minutes.
And do you, so when you use those videos, do you have a discussion afterwards, or is it just like the cartoons where you just see, let them make, you know, laugh at it or figure it out, and then you move on?
I would say for most of the videos that I've picked out, we have at least a little bit of discussion afterwards. I would say, I'm trying to think of each one. I think for each one we'll have maybe at least, you know, a minute or two of discussion afterwards. Most of them it's pretty clear what I'm trying to get at anyway, with that the humor is pretty broad in those, and so it's pretty clear what I was trying to get. But we can have a good minute or two of discussion afterwards.
Okay. And do you do the same thing with the videos like you did with the cartoons, that you said in the cartoons you refer back to the cartoon at a later course saying, hey, remember that we never, you know, accept something here?
Right. And later in lecture, too. Right, and later in lectures, sometimes if we'll hit on a concept again where there's response bias, I'll say, hey, remember that Betty White video that we saw, you know, and how bad that was, you know, with the response bias. So it goes both ways. I'll use the videos to refer to something we've already talked about in class, but then later in class, that makes a memorable example to refer back to when I'm trying to point something out.
Okay. All right. And you said also that they are typically, you're using the videos typically also in the middle towards the end of the class.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's correct. Okay.
If I did that in the beginning, then it would make the rest of the lecture really boring in comparison to the,
okay,
to the video in the beginning. So I like to work up to the video as opposed to having to follow it.
All right. Now, where in the semester?
Oh, okay. Let me go back to the timing of the video. The one video that I do start a lecture with is Bill Nye the Science Guy gives a fantastic overview of the normal distribution, what the normal curve looks like, why it's so common in nature, that kind of thing. And so for his, that is the, you know, about it's 3 to 5 minutes, I think, of him talking about the normal distribution from one of his shows. And I do start that because it's just a really, really nice overview of what the normal distribution is.
Okay.
Much better than I could explain it. So that is the one that I start a class with.
Okay. Now, typically during a semester, I think I remember you saying that more of the cartoons are used in the beginning when you talk about experimental design.
Yeah, it's just easier to find those.
Okay. So what about the videos? Are they used all throughout or in a very concentrated area during the semester?
Well, again, it's easier to find those when you're talking about surveys or experiments. So I have more of those towards the beginning of the semester, and I wish I could find more towards the end, but I haven't been able to find as much for the later topics. It's hard to find a funny video about a nova, you know, because they're just not, you know, if you watch Saturday Night Live, you're just not going to see it. So I would love to find more. I just haven't been able to yet. But I'm okay with that because the beginning is when they're getting to know me anyway and when I'm trying to set the tone for them feeling comfortable in my class. And so if I had to have them either heavier for the beginning or end, I'd rather have them heavier in the beginning because I have more activities that I can do with them later, more hands-on activities like with M&Ms or chocolate chip cookies or that kind of thing for the harder topics anyway. And so it's okay that I have more videos towards the beginning.
Okay. All right. All right, so let's look at why you use these two types of things. I know you've already hinted at some of that, but for the cartoons, specifically, why do you use those?
Really just to let everybody catch their breath and to release some stress.
Okay. And do you find that effective?
Really, I do find it effective. You can see their shoulders going down, you know, their faces relax for a minute. They're not, you know, frantically trying to copy things down, you know, for that time. It lets everybody catch up, and then we're all at a good starting place to move on to the next problem.
Okay.
And it just makes it just the tension in the room goes down so much, which I think opens their minds to whatever we have to do afterwards.
And does that work also with the videos?
It does. It definitely works. I think it's even more effective with the videos, although you have to take a longer break to do the videos than with the cartoons. I think they like the videos better than the cartoons, But that's okay. I mean, some of the cartoons are a little cheesy, but that's okay too. I'm fine with them being cheesy because it's the tension breaker that I'm looking for.
Right. Now, why do you think that the videos are more effective with the students? Is it because it's a longer period of time that they're
Well, I think the videos are better and more relevant to them. You know, from taking a Saturday Night Live video or, you know, an NBC sitcom clip, you know, or a Simpsons clip, that's more relevant to them than a cheesy cartoon is, I think. You know, they're using both their ears and their eyes to take it in. You know, it's something that they're familiar with. They've certainly seen those shows before, and so the characters are familiar to them. You know, Bill Nye is from their childhood, so they have good memories of him. And so I just think that that's a more familiar format for them. If I used videos that weren't funny or if I used videos that weren't as well done, I don't know that they would have as big an effect as the ones, you know, taken from TV and movies.
Right. So more because not only that they're familiar with the characters in the shows, but the quality of the way it's
right.
done is
Right.
Important.
It's not something
so
that somebody just
something...
took their cell phone out and took a video of. You know, they're high production values.
Right. Okay. So if you took something, say, from the 50s that was discussing statistics, black and white video,
right,
that
unless
wouldn't
it was
be
done,
as effective.
It wouldn't be as effective unless the guy was dressed really badly and had a high whiny voice or something. You know, there would have to be something funny about it that would draw them and, you know, see everybody using slide rules to do it. You know, something that would make it humorous. Oh, I thought of I know that we've moved on in the survey, but I thought of another way that I use humor. I have my students doing these online writing and peer review assignments. If I tell you the name of the system, it will probably give me away for who I am in the interview. But my students hate these assignments. They hate them because they have to read journal articles. They have to, you know, pick out the important statistical details from these articles. They have to write about it, and they have to review each other's work online. And it's just a lot of work. It's so good for them. It's like broccoli. You know, they just need to do it, whether it's their favorite or not. But the cheese sauce that I put on this broccoli is that the journal articles I find have a sense of humor to them. You know, there's something that just tickles you about each of these articles. And you know, like there was this one that I found where and I think it was probably a joke in the, you know, for the British Medical Journal, but these Australian scientists did this experiment, this full experiment on why their teaspoons kept disappearing from the common break rooms. You know, so they studied where they went, you know, so we talked about the experimental design using that. It was published in the British Medical Journal. It was a well-done experiment, but we talked about the different features of that and the statistics that they got. There was this other one about these French researchers who went to Antarctica to study penguins, but they wanted to find out how much weight you could put on a penguin's back or feet to wake up a sleeping penguin. It was just the stupidest experiment, but it got funding from the French government. It got published, and so we just talked about it. You know, so I try and find articles that have a sense of humor to them just to try and make the assignments less painful and to draw the students in and get their interest a little bit more to make it go down a little bit easier.
Right. That makes sense. Actually, I'm intrigued now about some of those. I didn't even think of using that kind of stuff because I think that would really, I agree, that would probably make it a lot easier for them to perform the assignment if they sit there and go, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah, and I try and find the crazy ones. I really do try and find them. We had one about bowerbirds and their mating habits where they use the fembots, you know, the female bowerbird robots. And so I showed them videos of the experimenters doing that, you know, sometimes where the female bowerbird's head would fall off or it would fall off the track, you know, different things, mistakes would happen, you know, to try and make the experiment more real for them. There was another one where I had them use, there was an article in Educational Psychology Journal about the Rate My Professors website. Are you familiar?
Yes.
That, and whether hotness matters, because hotness is not mathematically used in the calculation for the overall rating of the professors. The system does not use the hotness in the calculation, but just psychologically, from the student's point of view, are the hotter teachers getting higher ratings? And do the students think that the teachers are hotter because they're better teachers, or do they think that they're better teachers because they're hotter? And so we talked about this journal. We wrote about the journal article, but then I also had them get into the Rate My Professor system and go to different departments at our school and sort out the hot professors from the not professors, you know, based on the chili pepper ratings and see whether that was true here at our school too. You know, what's the average for the hot professors? What's the average for the not hot, you know, and the average is higher. And, you know, what do you think? Would you give a rating? You know, and of course, all of them were indignant and said, of course, I would never use hotness, you know, to determine a teacher's quality. But you know, it was just really interesting to have them discuss that.
Yes,
The students had a blast, though, going through and checking their different teachers' ratings and talking about how that kind of system would be different than the census that the university takes at the end of the semester with the online ratings. And
Wow. Well, it's just, you're making me think so much, so that's very good. Making me think about what I'm doing in my own classes, so that's good. Okay.
Well, they make it less painful for us to grade, too. You know, if the work is interesting, then if we've got to grade them, it's much better.
That's right. Just had a couple more questions, and because it's already 46 after the hour, I don't want to hold you too much longer. But I think first, I want to say thank you because you're giving me so much details, which is really helpful. So I appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm really interested in this project.
Yeah, and if you want more, we can always, you know, talk more outside. I hope that I'm not sure what the what we're allowed to do as, you know, interviewers and interviewees.
Right.
We can contact each other afterwards.
I would like to know more. I wanted to get involved in that cluster at COS, but I was already pretty involved in the online cluster, and so I couldn't do both. I can only eat lunch one place each day. So,
sure.
But I would like to know more.
Sure. Okay. All right. So let's answer a couple of things. I think you've answered some of this stuff before. Now, you suggested to me that for the poems and the songs, that you don't use, you only have about one for each, and that you would be interested in using more of that.
Right.
What would help you use those more? And I think you've already suggested for the songs.
Yeah, don't make me sing. Have somebody good record it already. I would like that. So just having more options available would be good. Putting more things out there with videos already done, because I think it works well for the students to have something to look at while they're listening too, so that they don't start doing other work. You know, they'll focus better if more of their senses are involved. So videos of people singing, that I think would be good if they were well done.
Okay. So that it still needs a fairly good, high production value.
High production values would be great, but even if it weren't great, as long as the sound quality was good, if it was just a song, then that would be okay too.
Okay. All right. What about games? You suggested that you've seen Jeopardy used.
I have, and I would be interested in incorporating more games. I'm thinking as I transition to the 300 student lecture, for two sections for next semester, I would definitely love to incorporate more games. I'm not sure how to do that with such a large class. So if other people had suggestions on how to do that, I am definitely open to that. There's so much I don't know about teaching 300 students at one time. I'm trying to absorb as much advice as I can before January to try and pick up tips. But if somebody has some ideas for what has worked well in large classes, I would like to hear.
Okay. What about jokes that you suggest that not necessarily, you don't necessarily use them? We've talked about humor quite a bit, but the joke
mm-hmm.
part.
I just don't know if jokes are my style. I don't know. It takes a certain quality to be able to tell jokes really well. I'm not Larry Lesser, I'm not Jackie Miller. It's hard to, some people can tell them really well and some can't. I just don't know if that's my style of humor. So I don't know. I would be interested in seeing more, and maybe I can find some that would work for me, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
If we could get somebody like Larry who could do a whole stand-up routine with statistics jokes, and then we could take different clips out of that to show our students, that would make a really good, quick, 30-second, one-minute break in lectures at different times. That could be really good.
Okay.
Did anybody record the songs from Uscots with the New Zealand guy who had his guitar? Did anybody record any
of
that to be used?
Because
I would love to see something like that on YouTube or COS, and be able to reuse that, or the different times that Larry has done things. It would be great to have those and show them.
Yes, I agree. I will look at that, and if I can find out if someone's done that, I will. I'll get back to you on that.
Okay.
Can you give me, now we talked about a lot in this time, can you give me any other information that you might think that I forgot to ask? I've looked through my interview protocol, I don't see anything else, but can you provide anything else that you might think it would be important for us to know?
I don't think so, and I interrupted you quite a bit to throw in extra stuff already, I don't think so.
The amount of details you're giving me is wonderful, so it's really helpful.
But I think that this is a really valuable way to teach, and I don't think it works for everybody, so that's why I don't force it on my other lectures, because if that's not you, like if somebody made me tell jokes or try and sing those songs, that just wouldn't work for me. But other things do work for me. So it's a very individual thing. You can't just say, well, if you tell three jokes per lecture, you'll be successful. It's really very personality-based.
Okay.
You know, the person who's replacing me in 301 when I switch to 113 for the spring, her sense of humor is not the same as mine at all, and I don't think she's going to try and find the articles for those writing assignments like I did. I think she's going to take a very different tack because that kind of humor just does not come naturally for her, and there's no way that she could force her to do that, and it wouldn't work if you did.
Right.
Uh-huh. You have to match the strategies with the person, I think.
Right. I agree.
And even then, there's some classes that get your humor and some classes that don't. I teach three back-to-back sessions every time, and, you know, maybe 7:30 and 8:30 get my humor, but 9:30 doesn't, you know. And sometimes it's just a bad day, and sometimes it's a whole semester where the personality of the class just does not get your sense of humor, and then it's a long semester.
Right.
And the exact same jokes that work great at 7:30 and 8:30 just don't work at all.
Okay. I was thinking maybe, I mean, is it typically the last class? Do you teach straight through one class after the other?
I teach straight through. Well, you know, it's interesting. I thought that I would get more tired. I think I get more warmed up as I go along. There was one semester I had to teach four sections in a morning, and I would have 8:30, 9:30, office hours at 10:30, and then I taught 11:30, 12:30. So it was really 5 hours straight of dealing with students. And, you know, there wasn't time to eat in the middle or anything. You know, it was just nonstop for 5 hours straight of being with the students. And it was the same lecture four times in the morning. And I was really worried about teaching that 12:30 class, thinking I'm just going to have nothing left at all. I just am not going to be able to find the energy for that. But that class had the best sense of humor of any class that I've ever taught. And, you know, they weren't necessarily my strongest students, but they got me and I got them. And that was my very favorite class, and I had the best energy for that one, just because our senses of humor meshed. And you know, they were forgiving, I was forgiving. You know, it just worked. And so I don't think it depends on the time. The time of day. It just depends on the personality of the class. And the personality of the class can even be very different than the individual personalities in that class, but each class kind of takes on its own group personality.
Yes.
Have you noticed that too with yours?
Yes, I do. I teach two calculus twos in a row, and I notice the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a very interesting dynamic, and I know that there's a colleague of mine in Michigan State who studies that particular idea of how absolutely. Patricio Herbst is the instructor, researcher out there. He is really interested in learning how the individual personalities affect the whole group dynamic, the group personality, which is really kind of cool.
Does he have any articles or anything published on that?
He just, it's at the beginning of his research, and I think he and his wife are really leading it. Vilma Mesa is his wife. She presented at MAA Research in Undergraduate Mathematics Education in February in Portland, and just the beginnings of their research. So asking the conference there to give feedback on what's, you know, some of their initial findings were. So I'm not sure if they published yet, but...
Well, if you ever happen to see anything published by them and you think of that, if you could send me a link or a copy of the article, I would be very interested in reading that.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, that's some interesting... It's really interesting stuff that he's doing, so... But I'll definitely do that. And I hate to cut this short, but we are, like, you know, 56 minutes after the hour. I don't want to hold you anymore.
Sure, and it was a fantastic conversation. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And I have to say this because you gave me a lot of details, and I'm not getting that with my other interviews. I was wondering if it was me as the interviewer, but you gave me a lot of detailed information, which was really helpful, and I appreciate that.
Sure, and I'm interested in getting more involved, too, if there's anything else that you can think of that I could help with.
Sure, sure. Well, again, very pleasure to talk with you. I will include your name in a, we're going to select an individual for who conducted an interview with us for a $25 gift certificate.
Oh,
so I'll include your name on that. I'm not sure if you remember
that
or not, but...
No, that wasn't even why I agreed to do it. I just thought it would be an interesting conversation, so...
Right.
Yep.
So, but
does
again,
Mary Ellen Davis
you.
Still work with you? Sorry, does Mary Ellen Davis still work with you?
I think she retired. She might still be teaching a course or two, but I think she's retired.
Okay.
So, and I don't remember when I was... when I've been full-time and part-time off and on because I finished my PhD in the middle of teaching, you know, which was not easy. So
sure.
When I was full-time back in 2003, she was obviously leading, you know, among the leaders in our camp, our school. But she, but I didn't really get to know her much because I was so involved in teaching and doing my own research and writing and stuff like that. So I didn't get to know her very well. But I think she retired about 2 years ago when I started back full time again. So
okay.
I don't know much.
I worked
about
with her several years ago, but never met her in person. We did all of our work online or on the phone together.
Okay.
I was just wondering if she was still there.
Yeah, I think she is. I think she's teaching again part time, maybe a course or two, a year or so. But yeah, she. I know that everyone still misses her because she had such an impact in our institution.
Yeah, she was a wonderful woman to work with.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to make sure that I'm also, if there's another interview at 9 o'clock, they can get on here. Again, pleasure talking with you. I'll keep in touch with if I find some other information that might be helpful to you that you asked for.
Great.
And I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you very much. You too.
All right. You too. All right, thank
Bye.
You. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.